I'm your host, Lee W. Johnson, and welcome to my podcast, where I talk about all things related to magic, witchcraft, demonolatry, and a whole load of other related things. If you would like to find out more about me, get in touch with me, or hire me for a service, please go to my website, leewjohnson.com, or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. Welcome to the new week, and here we are. And if you don't know who I am, I'm Lee W. Johnson, and this is my channel. If you enjoy my content, please do all the usual stuff, depending on where you're watching this or hearing this. So if you're on YouTube, you know, hit the subscribe button and the notification bell so you know when videos are coming out. If you are watching this on Instagram, then please go over to my profile and follow. And if you are listening on the podcast, this is your first time, then you know, please follow me there, and of course share wherever you can, so that we can get more people and can spread the word, so to speak. All right, I'm actually working on, well, going to be working on a few things this coming month in November. Two of the main things, well, three of the main things, one is just going to be a rather long-term project. So firstly, I'm going to be working on getting the next part of the Black Crow series out. If you don't know what that is, the Black Crow is one of my books that I wrote, and what I decided to do was take specific topics out of that book and condense them into a smaller book and add more material to them. So I've already done the meditation and breathwork one, I've done the banishing rites. The next one is going to be sigil magic, so I'm going to be taking, as I said, the information out of the Black Crow that was pertaining to sigil magic, put it into a separate book, which is a lot smaller, and then adding more content to give more explanation, and go a bit more in depth into the topics themselves. So that one's going to be focusing on that one this month. I'm also going to be focusing on new video courses. So the one I'm going to be doing in November will be Candle Magic. By the looks of it, I've already created the outline, done all the background research that I need to do, etc., etc. It's going to be quite a big one, so that will probably take the whole month to create, and then I should have that out towards the end of the month. And then the third thing, which is a long-term project, what I'm going to be doing is developing a healing, just words have gone now, as they do, developing a system for healing which is actually focused on the demonic. So it will be demonolatry mixed with energy healing. It's going to be all energy healing type of work. So I will be bringing some ideas from Reiki, from demonolatry, vibrational magic, sound, quite a few things into it to create the entire system. And it will, again, as I said, revolve around the demonic. So we will be looking at a lot of the demonic, the healing demons, Vereen, Marbas, etc. And it will be a system that will hold a current, and therefore there will be probably attunements and such things as well. So that's going to be, as I said, a long-term project. So watch out for that. I'll probably do updates as I go. This week I want to talk about the spirits of the Goetia. Now, I tend to focus a lot on the spirits of the Goetia, which is why Demon of the Week is the spirits of the Goetia. And the main reason for that is that I developed a connection with them many years ago. So over the years, it really has been working with the spirits of the Goetia. I do occasionally touch on such things as the spirits from that are come from Abramelin or Abramelin, because I did the Abramelin operation several years ago. So there's obviously a connection there through the actual work itself. The other grimoires I don't particularly focus on very much. I have touched on some of them here and there. But as I said, my main focus has been the Goetia, because it's just a relationship that I've created myself, or that has developed and created over several years. So when it comes to spirits of the Goetia, it's been quite a journey to try and figure out what these spirits are, where they come from, and such things. And as always, this is my personal opinion, this is my perspective, this is how I view things, this is how information and knowledge has developed in myself and in my own head over years and years. Obviously, everybody else is going to have a different opinion. There are some people that suggest that the Goetia spirits are all ancient gods and goddesses, and we find this with Astaroth, Belial, Baal, even, you know, you've got the main names, but we also have Horus, in the Goetia, H-A-U-R-E-S, which is also Flereus, but a lot of people have suggested that it is Horus, the Egyptian god. I've even seen over the years mention of such spirits as Halfus and Malphus, being Hugin and Munin, the ravens of Odin. So you have a lot of the spirits that people are connecting to the older gods and goddesses and such beings, entities, deities. We also have people who consider the spirits of the Goetia to be archetypes, and also Crowley also mentions this in his introduction to the Goetia itself, is that they are aspects of the psyche. All of these are completely valid. All of them are true. They are all things. You know, I think how we interact with them becomes how we perceive them, how we view them, how we create the relationships with them, and that determines, you know, if they are separate entities, or they are aspects of the psyche, or they are archetypes. None of these are wrong. They're all correct. But my own personal view, more recent developments, I suppose, I mean, I have gone from them being these separate entities to being gods and goddesses from ancient traditions, to being archetypes, to being aspects of the psyche. All right, so the most recent development is that they are, you'll find this in modern demonolatry, there is reference to the Goetia spirits being djinn. Now, when we talk about djinn, again, there are lots of opinions about what the djinn are. But the djinn are a race of beings that were created before humans. They were came out of the desert, they were created from fire. Now, when we are referring to demonolatry, the demons within demonolatry, within modern demonolatry, what we're talking about are divine intelligences. And we can stretch that aspect, that definition, across the board. We can include angels, we can include gods and goddesses from all areas, from all different traditions. We can include demons, we can include fae, we can include a lot of spirits which are considered to be divine intelligences. But within modern demonology, I've said this over and over, we focus on a specific pantheon of spirits, of deities. And those spirits, those deities, those divine intelligences that we focus on are usually in the area of ancient Middle East. So this is your Phoenician, your Mesopotamian, your Egyptian, your Babylonian, that whole ancient Middle East area. So we find here the jinn. And the jinn came out of the deserts. They are a race of being which were created from fire. And there's a lot of mythology around the jinn. I don't want to get into that mythology. I'm still trying to work through it and trying to figure out what, button down what I actually consider to be, I can't really say truth, but my truth. Let's put it that way. Because there is a lot to work through, there's a lot to consider, there's a lot to talk about. Not just with other people, but with the spirits themselves, to get down to the nitty-gritty of it. So I don't want to get into that, but I do consider the Goetia to be Jinn. And in terms of that, we can then say, depending on your definition of fae, if we consider fae to be the all-encompassing umbrella of otherworldly beings, then we can put them under the category of fae. They react. They created. The jinn were a culture. They were a species. They were a race. They had their own culture. They had religion, just like we do, and just like the fae do. So we can say that the jinn are fae, in a sense. Now, when it comes to this, we coming back to the names, and such names as Belial, as Astaroth. I don't particularly think that they are the same entities as the deities, the ancient gods and goddesses that they are said to be. I don't think that Belial from the Goetia is the same Belial that we would consider to be a god of ancient worship. Or probably the best one to actually consider here is Baal. Baal, in a sense, is actually, Connolly actually said that Baal is the fiery aspect of Baal. Now, when we say Baal, Baal really translates to Lord, and Baal can be added to many, many names. Baal Berith, Baal Zebub. It can be added to a lot of names because it means Lord, so it's Lord of da 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 da. So, when we're just considering the name Baal, it's a bit difficult to actually pinpoint which deity that is. But Baal from Goetia is considered to be the fiery aspect of Baal. And in many ways, that makes sense coming back to the jinn, who were a fiery race. So we have that one. We had then have Astaroth, who is considered to be cognate to Astarte, Inanna, and Ishtar. However, when you look into the aspects, the offices of these four different beings, these entities, Astarte, Inanna, Ishtar are ancient goddesses. They envelop this whole fertility, war goddess, sex goddess, love, passion, that whole aspect. Whereas Astaroth from the Goetia doesn't encompass any of that at all. Completely different. But so what I'm trying to get at basically is that I don't believe that the spirits of the Gwesha were these ancient gods and goddesses, which a lot of people consider them to be. I believe that they were djinn. They were djinn. They were spirits of the fire, of a fiery nation, just to put it that way. And in respect to that, you know, we humans, we name our children after, quite often after gods and goddesses, after deities. And I think it's very much the same here. These djinn were named after the gods and goddesses, and that's why they got, you know, the names from the deities of the ancient Middle East. But it doesn't mean that they are that god and goddess. They are their own entity, and we work with them in that sense. So I don't know if that was confusing or not, but that's basically what I have come to believe. So you know, when I talk about Astaroth or Belial, I'm not actually from the Goetia. I'm not actually talking about the same entity as the what we consider to be the god or goddess. Doesn't make them any lesser, let's put it that way. I mean, these djinn, these spirits, are not any lesser to these gods or goddesses. We are no lesser to them. I think that's where a lot of people fall down, especially when it comes to things like the Goetia, where we give them rank, we give them this hierarchy of king, duke, knight, etc. And because of that hierarchy, because of that rank, we consider the kings to be more powerful than the dukes. It's not the case at all. You know, none of these spirits are lesser or greater than any others. They just have their own office, their own aspects, their own things to do, like we do in our lives. You know, one person's an architect, another person's a plumber, another person's an electrician, another person's a doctor. They all had a calling to something, or they all got educated in a particular thing. Maybe it was a family business and they continued the business. But we all have different things that we do, different professions, different skills. We all have different skills. And if we bring all of those skills together, we work together, you know, we can get a lot of things done. So when we look through the spirits of the Goetia, they all have their different offices, their different aspects, their different skills. You know, they have their skill sets. And it doesn't make them any greater or lesser than each other or the gods and goddesses. It just means that they have a particular skill set. Same with the gods and goddesses. You have your gods of money and finance. You have your gods of healing. They all have their own skill sets, just as we do. So, you know, I think we need to try and get out of that idea that these spirits are have this ranking, have this hierarchy. You know, if you even look at the Dukant hierarchy, you'll find that it's not necessarily a hierarchy. It's more of grouping them into families. So you have your love demons, you have your death demons, you have your healing demons, and they're kind of grouped into families rather than hierarchies, although for some reason we refer to it as a hierarchy. But anyway, so that's really it. Just my opinion of what the Goetia spirits are. And I think if we look at the other grimoires, we might find something similar. You know, maybe in a few months or a couple of years from now, I will focus more on one of the other grimoires and speak to the spirits there in more detail and get their opinion. But you know, for now, I love the Goetia. I love the spirits of the Goetia. They are family, really. They're part of the gang. I always used to think, years ago, I was actually talking to somebody and I said to them, it's like The spirits of the Gresha are like a biker's gang, and they either like you or they don't like you. If they like you, you get pulled into the gang. If they don't like you, don't go back. I've always seen it like that. I think we should get some biker jackets or something for the spirits of the Gresha. It is Ask Lee Wednesday again, and as per usual, thank you for all the questions. By the way, I did run out of questions, and I got four new questions to do over the next few weeks. So I'm going to try and keep it to one question a week now, just in case we run out and get a threat. But if you do have questions, please leave them in the comments below, or wherever you are listening or watching. Just leave me a comment and just say that it is an Ask Lee question, and I'll include it on a Wednesday. Obviously, if you're listening on the podcast, you're listening to this on a Friday or afterwards. I do record Monday and Wednesday on my YouTube channel, and then actually change it into a podcast for you guys on a Friday. So if I'm saying Wednesday and it's not Wednesday, you know why. All right, so question from Yolandi. Hello, Yolandi. I have one or two questions, which ended up being more than one or two, I think. But very good questions and very big topic, so this might be a long one. How do I tell the difference between a pet and a familiar, and why can't a familiar be your pet as well? Is your bond with a familiar a lifelong bond or temporary? And what is the difference between a spirit animal, a familiar, and a fetch? How do I know that something is my fetch and not anything bad, for lack of a better word? All right, a very big topic. And with many things within magic and witchcraft, or within the world itself, when you start to actually delve into things and question them, there's going to be lots of opinions. Especially when it comes to the fetch and the familiar. There are a lot of ways we can view these things, these topics, and a lot of opinions that have developed over centuries. So I'm going to speak about this from my own understanding, and I think what we need to do is start with some definitions, so that you know what I'm talking about. So we'll have a quick definition, look at definition of power animal, spirit animal, and familiar and fetch. All right. So a power animal is very much the fetch beast. Actually, let me start there. Let me start with fetch. So the fetch is our spiritual counterpart. Now, I tend to follow more along the lines of what Robin Artisan usually says and said years back in his book. The fetch is split into the fetch beast and the fetch mate. Now, the fetch beast is very much your animal aspect, your animal nature. This forms part of our soul. Whereas the fetch mate is very much our fey companion. And we'll probably get into this a bit more later, but when we speak about the fetch mate and the, oh, sorry, the fetch beast and the fetch mate, we can relate this back to such things as the sacred marriage, the hieros gamos, the union of the lower self and the higher self. Coming back into the personal daemon and the holy guardian angel and things like this. In fact, we are, if I remember correctly, we are planning a blackout chat in December, I think, to speak about the Hieros Gamos. So that should be a quite interesting show. But that's very much the fetch is the fetch beast and the fetch mate. Okay. A familiar is very similar to the fetch, really. I would say if we were to actually take fetch beast and power animal, we can put those together. So power animal is the animal nature. It is the fetch beast and the power animal is very much that animal nature that you have. And this is a spiritual entity, a spiritual animal, which stays with you for your lifetime. You always have been this, you always will be this. Now, I have found from personal experience that we can have more than one of these power animals or more than one of these fetch beasts. And I've got a feeling, I just need to delve into a bit more, but it's been years since I've been trying to figure this one out. I do have the suspicion that we may have a fetch mate, or keep saying fetch mate, a fetch beast, which is our animal nature, which relates to different realms, the three realms, in fact. So if we look at the three realms as being earth, sea, and sky, we would have a fetch beast or animal nature, our power animal, which is earth-based. We may have then we would probably have one which is sky-based, and then we would have one which is sea-based. So it may be a bird, a fish, and a land animal. It gets a bit tricky, but it's just a suspicion of mine, something I'm trying to button down and get to the root of. But coming back to fetch beast, your fetch beast, your power animal, is that animal aspect of ourselves which is always with us. It never leaves, it always will be that animal. Then we look at spirit animals. Spirit animals or spirit guides, in this respect, are animals which are they temporary, they come and they go. So they come into our lives when you need to learn a particular lesson, and then they leave when that last lesson's done. Then, I mean, we can look at totem animals as well. A lot of people consider totem animals to be the power animal. I don't actually like to use the word totem for the power animal. For me, a totem is more of a clan or family-based thing. So a clan or a family may have a bear as a totem, for instance. But that's not the individual's power animal. So it's kind of like the power animal for a group of people rather than an individual. All right, so then we have familiar. So when it comes to familiars are very much, in my understanding, the type of entity which a lot of people actually consider to be the fetch in terms of a spirit which goes out and fetches things. So it fetches information, it fetches knowledge, it can fetch power. And this is, for me, very much the which is familiar. And this familiar can take many different forms. It can take the form of being what in chaos magic we would call a servitor, thought form, which has been created for these particular tasks to go out and fetch. And a lot of people will create these thought forms, these fetches, or these familiars to only exist for a year and a day. And then it dissolves, and then you create a new one. That just prevents it from, going haywire and causing havoc. Some consider the familiar to be a spirit animal which comes to you from the spirit world, from the fey world. In some cases, it is a physical animal, it is a pet. But what often happens in that case is that it is the spirit animal which takes possession of the body of the pet. I think that's where things have gotten a little bit confusing. That entity is very, very different to what a normal house pet would be. The interaction's different, and in some cases, it doesn't even need to be a pet. It can just be an animal that has popped up one day on your path, and it kind of looks at you, and you look at it, and you can see in its eyes it's not really an animal, it's something different. And it's just there temporarily just to give you a reminder or give you some aid or something like that. But that would be a familiar. So there's lots of things we could consider in this realm of discussion. So let me just get back to your questions. Let me see if I'm answering all of them. How do I tell the difference between a pet and a familiar? And why can't a familiar be your pet as well? Okay, so I think I've answered that one there. So basically, a pet can be a familiar, but it's usually a spirit which has taken possession of the body of the pet. And there are some particular rituals. I wouldn't consider them to be very wholesome. But there are some rituals where you can actually call the spirit into a pet, into a household pet, and take over the body. And traditionally, you would then feed your familiar blood, usually, well, as far as I remember, milk and blood, and the blood sustains the familiar. But there's a lot of lore behind that. There's a lot of lore that goes back a long way, surrounding this whole thing. All right. So a pet can be a familiar. It's just a bit different to what a normal pet is, and that's where I think the confusion has come in. A lot of people just adopt or buy a cat or a dog or something, and they love this animal, and it becomes their familiar. We all love our pets. It doesn't mean they're all familiars. But at the same time, it could be. So I can't really say it is or it isn't. I think you need to decide that yourself. But everybody just carrying on that their pet cat is their familiar, but just because they love their pet cat doesn't necessarily mean it is their familiar. But opinions. Is your bond with a familiar a lifelong bond or temporary? Again, we have to come back to definitions. Familiar, I would consider to be something more akin to what some people call the fetch, as in it does work for you. It goes out and fetches things. It helps you with your magic. Those entities I would consider to be temporary, but when it comes to the actual fetch, the fetch is permanent, as in the fetch mate, our own soul, our own animal, nature. What is the difference between a spirit animal, a familiar, and a fetch? Okay, I think we've covered that. How do I know that something is my fetch and not anything bad, for lack of a better word? You will just know, to be honest with you. When it comes to the fetch beast and the power animal, you just kind of know because it's part of your soul. I don't think there's any way we can actually misinterpret him. And there's various exercises that we can do. You find a lot of these exercises within core shamanism. Michael Harner outlined them quite a lot, and people have extended from Harner's work. In that, just to give you a basic idea of the actual process, you would take a shamanic journey, and you would venture down the hole that leads into the underworld, into the ground, and then you would come out into a scenery. And there's various ways that this then progresses, but in one, you would just sit and just wait for animals to come up to you. Some will watch you, some will actually approach you. The ones that approach you are usually the animals which are more comfortable with you. They're not ready to interact with the ones that watch you aren't ready to interact. Maybe at a later stage, maybe they're just keeping an eye on you just to make sure things are going okay. But what usually happens is there's one animal that comes up to you three times. Once that animal comes up to you three times, that's your power animal. You can introduce yourself, and then you can start creating and building that relationship. But another one is very similar. Again, this is called shamanism, where you get onto a boat in a river and the boat takes you down the river. And as you're going down the river, you're going to see animals pop up here and there. And the animal you see three times is your power animal, your fetch beast. There's a lot of different ways you can do this. That just seems to be the most popular. I think that one's made it more into the mainstream, so more people have access to that type of information. Now, when it comes to things like the familiar and the fetch, we always consider them to be animals, and that's not necessarily the truth. Throughout history, they have also been known to be humanoid. A familiar or a fetch can also be a humanoid figure, an entity which has a humanoid or human shape, human form. And this can come, tie in with the fetch mate, which would be a fey companion, and therefore would have a human form, arms, legs, head, etc., standing upright and things like that. But we can go into a lot of lore. For instance, the fetch in some lore is considered to be a shadow, and that shadow usually pops up near to a person's death. That has also been referred to as a fetch. In that case, I believe has come to fetch the person's soul. So there's a lot of lore where we talk about fetch. The fetch is part of the soul, though. The familiar is usually an entity which helps you out with your magic. But again, as I said, a familiar doesn't necessarily need to be an animal. It doesn't need to be a toad or a frog or a dog or a cat or anything like that. It could actually be a humanoid form. It's a spirit, and a spirit is energy, a body of energy. So to try and give it arms and legs and everything else, there's really just us giving these things anthropomorphic aspects and anthropomorphic forms. So don't think of a familiar just as an animal. And I think coming back to my comparison of terms, actually, where I compare fetch beast with power animal, I think we could actually say that the familiar is the same as the spirit animal, and the spirit animal is the one that pops up every now and again to help you on your path, to guide you, to help you with your magic, help you with your life. And when that lesson is learned, it can then move on. And it does. They pop up, they go away. I've actually had one for years and years and years. But it is a spirit animal, which is the heron. It's been an interesting one because, as I said, it's just been around for a long time. But it pops up every now and again. It's not there permanently, but it kind of shows itself. Just to give me a reminder that I'm on the right path. So whenever I see a heron, I know I'm on the right path. And for a long time, I didn't see it, but more recently, I've just been seeing heron after heron after heron for the past several months. So it's just this constant reinforcement and constant engagement. But it's not there permanently, it just pops up just to give me a reminder every now and again. And the first time I saw heron was absolutely amazing. I was walking alongside of a lake, walking along the path, kind of circled the lake, and about, I have to say, about 10 meters away from me, all of a sudden this heron just landed, right on the path I was actually walking on. Stayed there for a little bit, I just froze. This is a big bird, and just absolutely froze. freaking amazing. It really was amazing. And then it just took off. And it you know, you kind of get these messages when the spirit guides show up. And you quite often, spirit guides I've found show up in real life. Well, real life's a bad word. In the mundane world, in our physical world, I've had them pop up every now and again. Crab, I remember. There was carp as well. But there's an interaction with them that just kind of stands out. It kind of hits you in the face. It's not like, you know, if I step onto my balcony, for instance, and a bird lands on the railing, you know, that's just a bird landing on the railing. But these interactions with these spirit guides, these spirit animals, are really, they just kind of knock you. They cannot be mistaken. So, you know, anyway. All right. So I think, you know, when it comes to that last question, how do I know that something is my fetch and not anything bad? There really is no misinterpreting it. You feel it. You feel it in your gut. It's a visceral feeling. There's no question. So I think that answers that question anyway. Alright, so that's it for this week, and I will see you next week for more. Have a good one for now. Cheers. This podcast was brought to you by, well, myself, Lee W. Johnson. To find out more about me, please visit my website at leewjohnson.com or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. If you like the video format, then subscribe to my YouTube channel, where I also host a live show every Friday with Rev Kai called The Black Hat Chat. It's just two witches chatting about traditional witchcraft and other topics. That's me for this week. Hope to hear from you soon. Thanks for listening.